Welcome to the Sanity Interview. My name is Rebecca Sugar. My co-host, A.R. Hoffman, is still away, but he'll be back next week. And we're joined today by our guest, John McLaughlin. He is the CEO and partner at McLaughlin & Associates. He's worked on as a strategic consultant and pollster for over 40 years, helping some of America's most successful corporations and winning some of the toughest elections in the nation. Since 2016, John has worked as an advisor and pollster for President Donald Trump. And internationally, he's done work for conservative leaders in the UK, Canada, Hungary, and Israel. John, we're really happy to have you here today. We are just post the Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani win in the Democratic primary here in New York City. It was an upset against Governor Andrew Cuomo, and there's a lot to talk about. I want to spend a few minutes on a postmortem and get your sense of some of the key factors that went into this victory for Mamdani. And then I hope we'll get to what we can look forward to and what we can plan on for the future. I want to start, first of all, with just the big WTF question, which a lot of people are asking, you know, but really, was this a win by Mamdani, a loss by Governor Cuomo, or some combination of both?
It's some combination of both, but it wasn't a surprise. I mean, you already mentioned it that my brother Jim and I and our polling firm, we even though we didn't have a horse in this race, we had done some polling and we have a history of polling. This 4 years ago, we called the Adams race correctly for the New York Post right before the election. We'd done work for the New York City PBA. So 4 years ago, we had some experience with the ranked choice voting in the Democrat primary. And this time around, I had a candidate who was looking at the race, but she couldn't get calls back from the Republican chairman. But we'd done a poll early in January, and Andrew Cuomo at that point in time in our poll was in the high 30s. And because it's ranked choice voting, you need to then start amassing vote from that to get you to the 50% in the multiple rounds. And you get to vote five times. And a lot of people outside New York City don't have a clue with how complex and how, you know, what kind of a shell game they're playing. But for Cuomo, he had among Democrats at that time in January, he had a 49 favorable, 47 unfavorable rating, which capped his ranked choice voting, because then the second choice he was running in single digits. And a lot of the media polls that came out after it, even though they had him ahead, they were raising this false expectation that he could build a ranked choice voting. And with that, Mamdani, because he entered the, you got to remember that in a Democratic primary in New York City, it is not only liberal, it's extremely liberal. So 4 years ago, you had Wiley and Garcia battling for, you know, trying to be the one who would outpoll Eric Adams because he was in the moderate lane. But New York City gets more complex then because you not only have ideological voting going on in a liberal Democratic primary, but you also have, for those of us in New York, ethnic tribal voting where, well, who's going to win the African-American vote? Who's going to win the Hispanic vote? Who's going to win the Jewish vote? For example, we also do polling for Televisa Univision, and they had done a poll in early May, and Cuomo was winning among the Hispanic voters, but Hispanic voters weren't a big factor in the turnout as compared to like younger millennial. And if you looked at Mamdani's headquarters, it was really like younger white liberals who were at his headquarters that night. So, you're trying to get this grasp of this race, and really the African-American vote and the Hispanic vote wasn't as important as these progressive white liberals, the Democrat Socialists of America, the cross endorsements that Landers gave Mamdani. And he had the momentum in the end. He also had a message, because Cuomo's message was, I have the experience to stand up to Donald Trump. Well, the Trump campaign, and having polled for Donald Trump in all three of his presidential races, and most notably last year in 2024, we built our popular vote, that we were able to win the popular vote. The votes that we got where they switched from Biden in 2020 to Trump in 2024, A quarter of them were black. A quarter of them were Hispanic. Their average age was 35. We were winning the right of center working class vote. Cuomo was losing the left of center working class vote. In effect, where he didn't get enough black support, he didn't get enough Hispanic support, and he certainly didn't get the Democrat socialists. So when you look,
I want to ask you about this messaging issue because. Right. Mamdani was famously doing those TikTok viral ads at halal chicken carts on the street and talking about the economics that most people are feeling. And Governor Cuomo was talking about being a good manager and defeating Trump. Clearly, the Cuomo camp was seeing the numbers that you're seeing. Why didn't they pivot?
I don't know, because remember early on, the Brad Honan was putting out numbers saying that. And he was correct in this, that it was Cuomo was the front runner and that Mamdani was second. And they were trying to build, like, we've got to stop Mamdani campaign before Mamdani was even really well known. And it may have backfired on them. So Mamdani correctly understood the message, just like Trump last year from the right was saying, we need to lower inflation. We need to help working class middle class families. We got to lower their taxes. We got to make the Trump tax cuts permanent. We definitely put Kamala Harris on the other side of taxes, where she was going to raise taxes. Inside the Democratic primary, Mamdani was saying, "Well, let's tax the rich," but he was saying we need an affordable New York. So let's freeze the rents. Let's have free bus rides. Let's make childcare more affordable. So he was doing the left to center populism that Cuomo seems to have missed. And he could have, but he didn't. So I don't know.
Another sort of mistake I think that the Cuomo camp made was they kept talking about anti-Semitism and socialism. Both of those things are hallmarks of Zohran Mamdani and his worldview, but they didn't seem to be useful messages when trying to attract voters toward Cuomo. Maybe people like socialism. Maybe they even like anti-Semitism. I don't know. Maybe they don't care about either when they can't afford to buy food. So what do you think about those two messages? And do you think they'll be sort of used again by the next person in the general election? And do you advise against it or for it?
Well, I don't have a candidate in this mayoral race, but I do have lots of candidates in the suburbs. I mean, we work for Bruce Blakeman, who's the county executive in Nassau County. We work for candidates Ed Day in Rockland County. We work for Mike Lawler, who's a congressman up in the Hudson Valley. So the anti-Semitism charge, it's really related to Israel. I mean, Mamdani has been very clever and has danced around trying to, say if he's, if he really is pro Hamas or not. So Israel used to, going decades back, it was not a political football. It's become a partisan political football now, where, I mean, Donald Trump was able to really get maximum support from the Orthodox community in New York. 4 years ago, we worked for Lee Zeldin. Lee Zeldin did very well, but we kind of get stuck at that 30% inside New York City, which makes it harder to win New York State. But in the suburbs, I mean, there's been a major shift where Jewish voters who were Democrat have moved right to the Republicans.
Anti-Semitism messaging, I think I'm hearing what you're saying, will work well if it's targeted outside of the city. But in the city, let's say in the general election for mayor, it may not be a useful tool.
Now, in the city, by the way, standing up to anti-Semitism is always the right thing to do because it's a moral issue. And as far as the practical politics, it resonates more in the Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox community. And to some degree, it resonates with the conservative voters, conservative Jewish voters, and reform voters. Like, for example, going, over a decade back, we did work for Bob Turner when he won Anthony Weiner's seat, and he did get 52% of the Jewish vote, which was very good. but some Democrats realize, you'll notice, like yesterday, Laura Gillen, who was able to win by a point in New York's 4th congressional district over Anthony DeSposito, she instantly distanced herself from Mondami and cited that issue as a factor. But, you know, on the other hand, she's already voted against the Trump tax cuts. She's on record voting for the highest tax increase in the history of America, where if the Trump tax cuts aren't made permanent, you'll have a $4.5 trillion tax increase. So, you know, like Mondami's going to, as he moves to the general election, you've got Curtis Sliwa, you've got Eric Adams saying he's going to be on an independent line. You've got Walden saying he's going to be on an independent line. So you've got three candidates splitting the non-Democratic vote, where you need rejection of the Democrat candidate by the Democrats. Typically, Democrats will be 70% of the turnout in New York City. Typically, Republicans are only 15%. So when we worked for Mike Bloomberg years ago, Mike Bloomberg had to get 40% or better of the Democrat vote to win. When he won after 9/11, when he beat Mark Green in that race, he got 30% of the African American vote, and he won the Hispanic vote. So, and it was mainly because Democrats got mad at the way Mark Green ran that campaign. And also Rudy Giuliani was popular at the time, particularly after 9/11, and he endorsed Bloomberg. So Bloomberg racked up big chunks of the Democrat vote and the base Democrat vote, precisely because of the rejection of Mark Green by Democrats. For somebody to beat Mondami, you need big parts of the Democrat Party to reject them and vote for one candidate. So what you've got is you've got now the anti-Mondami vote split into three camps: Curtis Sliwa with the Republicans, Eric Adams, and by the way, Eric Adams, he's responsible for Mondami in that Adams had an over 70% disapproval rating, that so much so that it wasn't just among Republicans, it was among Democrats, and it was among African-American voters, it was among Hispanic voters. So he pulled out of the Democrat primary because he couldn't win the Democrat primary. And now he's trying to run as an independent. And, him and Sliwa are going to end up splitting this anti-Mondami vote. Mondami all he needs to do is get over 50% is to get like 3/4 of the typical Democratic turnout. So that means you got 25% of the Democrats at best saying they're going to reject the guy. You need probably 40% of the Democrats to reject Mondami to be able to beat him.
What about the possibility of somebody else coming into the race? Is that realistic?
I don't see that somebody. So it's theoretically it's possible. The Conservative Party, it's too late for them to put somebody else on their line. You'd have to qualify as an independent, where it's hard to get the signatures and qualify. But I don't see, Mike Bloomberg back in 2001, he made the decision that he was going to run as a Republican, so he'd have that party line. And then he was able to run his campaign, where he ends up spending $80 million to win that race. I just don't see it right now. I mean, maybe Adams or Sliwa could work into a one-on-one race with Mondami, where you have large parts of the Democrat Party rejecting Mondami. But right now, you've got Bill Clinton endorsing him. You've got, Andrew Cuomo saying he's not going to run. Maybe he's going to run. I don't know. But you need Democrats to reject Mondami to be able to beat Mondami in New York City.
And what about this tension that Democrats are facing if they are, Governor Hochul? She has a whole state to think about. So to be the pro-socialist in New York, to endorse Mondani and defend his policies would be to her own detriment elsewhere in the state. What are Democrats statewide going to do about this problem?
I don't know. I'll be the last one they tell. But right now, I can tell you right now that a lot of Republicans are now drawing up scorecards with their Democratic opponents and saying, where do they agree with Mondami, or they are Mondami Democrat. So, nationally, I mean, we publish our national polls, and they're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez running for president. And our national poll is published on our website, McLaughlinOnline.com. She's a 29 favorable, 40 unfavorable. She would be J.D. Vance's
dream come true.
Dream opponent, yeah. He would love to run against her. New York, you know, I mean, Elise Stefanik, Mike Lawler, you know, other Republicans around New York State, they've already attacked Mondami. President Trump has already attacked Mondami. And your point about a socialist, I mean, Trump called him a communist, but your point about socialists, that's not a negative in terms of just being a socialist, particularly with younger voters who were born after when the Iron Curtain went down. If you say they're a big government socialist, then it gets a perspective for Americans where most Americans, we find in our national surveys, like about 60% to 15%, they are against, they prefer free market capitalism over big government socialism.
But that's a lot interesting. So adding big government to the word socialism makes the difference.
Yes, because it puts it in perspective, because that's the reality of it. Because you realize younger voters, I'm an older person, so I remember I volunteered for Ronald Reagan in 76 when I was in college. There was communism. There was the Soviet Empire. We had this glue to keep that coalition together that Reagan was able to win in a landslide against Carter and was able to win re-election because he faced down the Soviet Empire. Younger voters have no clue about that. They just, right. You know, we got voters now who were born in the 21st century that don't remember the evil empire.
So this is helpful because right immediately after Mondani won, I must have been contacted by dozens of friends who are already trying to organize the pushback against him in the general. And aside from what the advice that you just gave everybody, which was don't just say socialist, say big government socialist and drive home that particular message. Maybe you're sort of not that optimistic that anybody else could come in and beat Mondani at this point. But if one were to try and defeat him in the general, what would be some of the other pieces of advice you'd give in terms of messaging or turnout or other things that you think would be useful based on the poll work that you've done?
By the way, that framing has worked because we do polling with Newt Gingrich, and Newt had written a book about big government socialism. So because it puts it in perspective where they're going to tell you, you know, like everything they did during COVID, where the government's telling you everything, you can't do this, you could do that. Well, you know, without a pandemic, they would do it. So you're going to have that kind of government control from a Mondami who, you know, he's got a record in Albany. He's a state legislator. You can identify him with taxes, cashless bail, letting criminals out, defunding the police. You've got all sorts of issues that you can use with him. And you know what? You can take that record and match it up with, I already said, you can match up his record with Tom Suozzi's in Congress and Laura Gillen's in Congress. Like, they've already voted for the biggest tax increase in history. They're already in favor of that kind of big government socialism. So Republicans, this is a good polarization for where it creates a productive conflict that Republicans can win if they decide to run on these issues and debate these issues, which is why it's going to make it a little tougher to beat Mondami, because you've got Eric Adams in the race, who went from being a sanctuary city mayor to being not a sanctuary city mayor. And then you've got Curtis Sliwa, who's a Republican. So that's why I'm a little pessimistic, because you got two real candidates there who are going to split the anti-Mondami vote. And you need actually a Democrat to create the rejection in such a city where you've got 70% of the Democrats. You need Democrat rejection from within the party. And it looks like, you know, the bad part for Democrats who understand national politics and statewide politics is, if they start endorsing Mondami, it's going to make it more difficult for Kathy Hochul, who's already unpopular and doesn't have great ratings, for her to be reelected next year. And, you know, we came close with Lee Zeldin, but that final push to get the final couple points that we could flip to beat her, it was all Democrats. We needed more Democrats to win. We needed to get, instead of getting 30% of the vote in New York City, we need 35%, which means you need 25% or 30% of the Democrats to reject the governor. So
is there any hope that turnout, upping the turnout in a general election could change things, or is that too high a hill to climb?
There's not enough registered Republicans in the city. You know, so the real minority in New York City are Republicans. So, you know, there's not enough people living in Staten Island. You need them. See, the progress that Trump made, and everybody thought we were crazy. Trump had to go to these trials and stuff, be in New York City. They were persecuting him, you know, in New York City. Most of the popular vote we got that we gained, that we were able to win the national popular vote against Kamala Harris, came from like New York and New Jersey. And when he went to Crotona Park, he was getting African-American support. He was getting Hispanic support. He was getting people saying, hey, he's been persecuted. He's trying to make our lives better. He's trying to help us be safer. You know, and that worked for us. And I don't, you know, right now it's like the Democrats, they're willing to, you know, they've got this radical agenda that's made people's lives less safe in New York, less affordable in New York, because, you know, okay, they'll give you a free bus ride, but we're going to raise your taxes to pay for. You can't take a car into Manhattan without paying like $15, $20 or whatever the congestion fee price is. So so the working class is going to get punished in New York. So if the Republicans want to make that an issue, it certainly, you could have somebody that could make that case against Mondami. But right now you got two candidates that are trying to make that case against Mondami. You need one, and you need Democrat rejection. But against Kathy Hochul, her lieutenant governor has already bailed out on her. And somebody actually, she could face a serious primary within the Democrat Party, where, you know, I don't think Letitia James would do it, but Letitia James is ripe to get beat because, you know, when crime's such a concern in New York, she's the attorney general, and she's a cashless bail Democrat too, where they, you know, they arrest you and they let you go.
Did we get final numbers on the Jewish vote in New York generally for this election?
I didn't see, you know, as of today I was checking and I didn't see, you know, exit poll numbers. I saw reports of an exit poll that they were able to call Mondami the winner, but I didn't see a publication of final exit poll numbers. Okay. So if it exists in the media, I've not seen a good source that's put it out yet. Normally, like the New York Times would put it out, or some organization, CBS, would put it out, but I haven't seen it. So I have national exit poll numbers from when Trump ran, but not from this race. So, but that would be enlightening, because it would be enlightening to see how they did by, you know, ideologically, by race, by age, et cetera. If it exists in the media, nobody's put that out yet. So I think that they still may be going through the shock value, or like most of the polls that were done before the primary day. And there was a lot of early voting. So that makes it easier because you make phone calls to do that ahead of time. But most of the polls that were done before then, they had Cuomo ahead, and some of them had him over 50 and were predicting that he was going to win, and it didn't happen. I mean, you know, PPP had Mondami and Emerson had Mondami and Cuomo close, and they were saying that Mondami could win, but that was really late. So, you know, I don't, you know, I could see that there is a vote that to go get to create the rejection of Mondami, but I don't see the structure with the candidates right now. I don't see a Bloomberg on the horizon. I don't see a Giuliani on the horizon.
Right. This is depressing.
Sorry. I live in the suburbs of New York. I may have grown up in the city when I was younger, in the 20th century, gone to college, university in New York, but I still live in New York, in the suburbs of New York, and it's like you're fighting a battle with the Alamo. You know, you're like at the Alamo. You're waiting for, you know, I mean, I thought Lee Zeldin, we could have done it 4 years ago, but maybe we can win the governor's race next year. Yeah. That would be an important step.
And the governor then would be able to thwart Mayor Mamdani from many of the promises that he's made. A lot of the policies he's saying that he would enact, he can't do unilaterally.
Hopefully. Absolutely. I mean, that's the interesting part. Mondami is talking about certain taxes and, you know, raising taxes on the rich or doing certain things. That's the state legislature has that power. Not, you know, the certain things that the governor and the state legislature can stop the mayor and the city council from doing. So,
do you think that the Democrats are done putting up candidates like Governor Cuomo, Kamala Harris, other wildly unpopular, sort of more establishment types, because of these kinds of losses? And do they have anybody to put up who's sort of a moderate, who isn't a Mamdani on the other end of the spectrum? It feels like the Democrats don't learn. Do you think they've learned from this election?
I hope not, because...
I meant for you to answer that for the good of the state, not the good of your particular practice.
Well, I hope not, because... no, I don't think so, because you know what you've got is you've got the Democrats. I mean, four years ago, after President Trump lost and we were planning his reelection, I was introduced to President Trump in 2011 by Dick Morris. And Dick is a longtime friend, et cetera. And Dick had an idea that if Trump was going to win the national popular vote, even before Trump announced he was going to run, we needed to break down four legs of the Democrat Party, where we needed to get more African-American vote, get more Hispanic vote, get more from the younger voters, and do better among women. And we actually did four polls on those things before Trump announced, and Dick published them. And, you know, with Trump, we got 21, according to the exit polls, we got 21% African-American men. Harris was tougher among the women because she happened to be a woman. That was obvious. But against Biden, we would have gotten more, and we probably would have won states like New Jersey and New Hampshire, et cetera. Among Hispanics, we got a record 46%. We saw that when we were doing polling with our polling company, Opinionos Latinos. So we helped the president there. We certainly did better with younger voters. And suburban moms, you know, they kept on saying, why are you running these ads about transgender athletes? Well, sports moms were flocking to us. I mean, it was just, you know, culturally, the Democratic Party is at a step, and they're going, you know, if they hadn't picked Biden in 2020, they would have picked Bernie Sanders. And if they, you know, Eric Adams was their moderate in 2021 for mayor. And then they forced Adam to go left on sanctuary cities, et cetera. And even to the point where Biden not only prosecuted Trump, he was prosecuting Eric Adams, coincidentally. So that happened, you know, where Biden was literally his Justice Department was after Eric Adams. And it seemed to be an interesting coincidence that when he was going, Adams was going to going from New York City to Washington to talk to Biden about sanctuary cities and aid and needing more money. All of a sudden, the Biden Justice Department is, you know, the FBI is raiding Adams's campaign workers, you know, his finance people and stuff. So, so the Democrat Party right now has got clearly got big problems in its base, where the radical left, the socialists, the big government socialists, the radical left, the cultural left warriors want to take it farther left. And as they take it farther left, that's great. You know, I think that's wonderful. Yes. They go do that.
Okay. So leave us with some detail about races that you're looking towards yourself working on the polling for the future. Are you working on the governor's race? What do you see there? What other races around the country or even maybe internationally that you're excited about?
Well, right now, I mean, I think the most important thing that's going on in the Republicans, President Trump today is holding an event at the White House at 4:00 talking about making his tax cuts permanent. Because the last time the Republicans were able to break the midterm jinx was in 2001 after, after 9/11, President Bush pumped the economy full of money. We were doing a certain amount of work for them. They had a tax cut that went into effect the second quarter of 2002. So you had a growing economy. You had a sense of patriotism where we're fighting, the Al-Qaeda and the terrorists in the Middle East who had attacked us on 9/11. Ironically, now you got this guy Mondani, who's wants to be the mayor of New York City. But President Trump is succeeding in bringing peace to the Middle East. He's succeeding. We've now done what we needed to do to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons, at least for hopefully a number of years. And that sense of American strength and patriotism needs to continue. But passing the tax cuts and making them permanent enables us to have a pro-growth plan to grow the economy next year, where like in 2002, when we picked up 2 Senate seats and 8 House seats, this is our plan to hold the Republican House in the midterm so President Trump doesn't get impeached again. And at the same time, grow our economy, help the working class people that got him elected. The tax cuts will grow our way out of inflation, that we can reduce inflation that way. And people will feel, benefit like they did during his first term. If COVID hadn't hit, wages were growing, the economy was growing, we were in good shape. But when COVID hit, that changed the equation.
Are the polls telling you that there's some split in the MAGA base about this action in Iran, the way the media is reporting?
In Trump's base?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. His base is rock solid with him. And in fact, we'd asked the question, again, this is on our website, McLaughlinOnline.com. We asked the question if they agree or disagree with President Trump's America First policies, regardless of how they voted. And 63% of all voters said they did. So we have room to grow. If as long as we keep putting America first, whether it's keeping us safe in the world, because Iran's not after Israel, they're after us. So that nuclear weapon, it's an immediate threat to Israel, but it would have been a long-term threat to the United States. So that America First policy works, whether it's defense, national security, or whether it's growing our economy, or whether it's bringing jobs and manufacturing back home to America. So I think we're focused on, when you asked what we're focused on making sure that we can keep President Trump's policies moving forward so that we can keep our majorities in the House and the Senate next year.
Right. Okay, so to sum up, according to John McLaughlin, Zoran Mondani is likely to be our next mayor in New York. Governor Hochul's in jeopardy. And nationally, the Republicans have a good shot of retaining control of the House in the midterms.
In the Senate, yep. Rebecca, you got that right.
Hey, I'm leaving you on a happy note. I'm not asking anything else after that. I'm going to thank you very much for being here. Remind everybody again where they can find more of your work.
You go to our website, McLaughlinOnline.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.